going, man?
Ah, it's early for us. I feel like we normally do these in the evening, and I drink alongside them, but it's like the rare morning recording that we're doing right now.
Yeah, so, but I know you're like super caffeinated, so I feel like you're ready to go.
Well, I'm not as caffeinated as I otherwise would be. You know, for context, this is like, you know, morning after the Super Bowl, so I'm like, you know, a little hungover, got into it a little bit last night. And it's early. This is actually my first cold brew of the day, which is pretty rare. And I'm only like a third of the way into it. So I feel like I need to get some energy going here. What do you got for me today to give me a little energy?
I mean, I'm still thinking Super Bowl. Favorite Super Bowl ad, obviously the QR code, the bouncing around QR code. Mm.
Give me your take on that. So for people that don't have context or didn't watch the Super Bowl, there was an ad, basically it was a black screen and there was a QR code, which some people know what they are, some people don't, but basically this QR code was just like ping ponging around the screen in different colors. It was a Coinbase ad. And if you popped open your phone and scanned the QR code, it took you to Coinbase. And it crashed the site. Like within 2 minutes, the site was down from all the traffic from, you know, 100 million people watching the Super Bowl, and presumably a bunch of them logged into it at once, and it took down the site. So what was your take on it?
I mean, so I'll give you my macro take and my micro take. So my macro take, please, on the bouncing around QR code is it's an ode to, like, you remember in school when they used to like bring in a TV and we'd wait for like a video, and it was that basically this like bouncing around image, and it never hits the corners. And I think there's like an Office episode actually that like talks, that there's like a clip of it, maybe we can put in the show notes, where like the whole office is like watching the screen and they're just kind of waiting for it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the whole point is it's a nod to nostalgia. And I think like the macro thing is that nostalgia is one of the most powerful sales techniques of all time. And we saw that everywhere. That was the theme of the Super Bowl, in my opinion. Like, the winner was nostalgia. So, for example, like, the halftime show, like, was nostalgia, you know, to the max. So that's the macro. And then the micro, which is this particular ad, you know, I just think it's a brilliant way to get, you know, if they're going to spend $7 million on an ad and they're trying to get like 100,000 signups, like, yeah, it makes sense to put a QR code. And then it's like, yeah, it does make sense to like combine direct response plus nostalgia.
So the stats on it are pretty staggering, by the way. I completely agree with you, nostalgia. The actual stats on the ad, which I looked up this morning, are crazy because they spent $14 million for the 60-second spot during the Super Bowl. It was literally 60 seconds of this thing ping-ponging around. And it crashed the site within a couple minutes because of all the people going to it. The app went from being 186th in the world to second in the world overnight from running this ad during the Super Bowl. And so $14 million, and the return was that massive jump, plus all the earned media of people just talking about it constantly. We're sitting here talking about it, all the news articles this morning. I actually tweeted out something saying, if I were going to go drop a bold Super Bowl ad, I would probably pre-program my site to be down like 2 minutes after the thing dropped, because I personally think that the earned media of saying, oh, we crashed the site with our super bold ad that we ran, is more valuable than the site being up and people being able to like do something on the site when they go to it, because I think it extends the half-life of that overall kind of ad impression for much longer than it otherwise would have been.
Yeah, I thought that was I agree with you. I also think that, like, you mentioned like the App Store charts, like, one, you know, one thing about App Store charts is once you hit the top of the charts, like, other people basically will be like, oh, what's, you know, we'll just be discovering the charts and be like, oh, what's Coinbase? And so there's a certain amount of staying power that happens when you hit up and you know, and you do what's called a, you know, that's called like a burst marketing campaign, where you go up and there's a certain amount of staying power. So overall, like, Coinbase, I mean, my guess is they crushed it on those ads in terms of numbers. It makes me think, like, you know, for late checkout in our clients, like, should we be like taking out more TV ads, like, and throwing up QR codes? Are TV ads undervalued?
Are you and your team still using your personal phone numbers for work? Do you call customers, partners, or candidates with your personal phone number? Do you find it hard to manage your work and personal calls when they're all mixed together on your smartphone? Well, we have a solution today, OpenPhone. You can use OpenPhone to get dedicated business phone number and keep all your work conversations separate and organized. OpenPhone is an all-in-one business phone system that can help your startup look more credible from the get-go. And it works right from your existing smartphone or computer. Each phone number comes with its own inbox for managing calls, texts, and voicemails all together, making it easy to keep track of every conversation. Numbers can be shared with your teammates too. Make outgoing calls, answer incoming calls, and even respond to text threads together, all from the same phone number. You can even set business hours or mute individual phone numbers with a tap, helping you silence work calls without losing touch with friends and family. OpenPhone is the easy-to-use modern phone system designed for startups like yours. To get started and save 20% on your first 6 months, visit openphone.co/room. Again, that's openphone.co/room to save 20% on your first 6 months. You won't regret it. Hey everyone, Sahil here. By now, you know that I love going down rabbit holes. And today, I get to share one of my secret tools with you, Tegas. In today's market, we don't have time to spend weeks getting up to speed on a new company, industry, or idea. Tegas is the fastest way for investors and M&A teams to learn everything they need to know about a company, all from an on-demand digital platform. Tegas is the most extensive source of instantly available one-on-one conversations between investors and experts, covering companies from seed stage to the public markets. Just log in for instant access to 25,000 plus transcripts that are instantly searchable. To get a free trial today, sign up at tegas.co/room. Again, to sign up for a free trial, go to tegas.co/room. You won't regret it. It's sort of interesting. I mean, with how expensive digital advertising has gotten, do you go back like to the point of nostalgia? Do you go back to doing the old way? I mean, we've seen it in consumer. I spent a lot of my time in consumer in my old job, and the reemergence of things like direct mail and catalogs within consumer was fascinating because it was like, what's old is new, right? You had all these people all of a sudden realizing it was so expensive to acquire customers online and spend money on Google and Facebook and all of those things. And so they went to sending direct mailers and like these beautiful catalogs that were really immersive and interesting. And that became the new way to acquire customers. It was the same thing with small footprint retail like 3-4 years ago. All these stores realized that it was more expensive to acquire customers online than to put up a small, you know, store in Soho and have that be like a billboard plus a place for them to create an immersive experience. But this feels like the next emergence of that. It was also very clear that crypto was kind of one of the themes of Super Bowl ads this year. You just have all these crypto companies that have raised so fucking much money and needed to find creative ways to deploy it. And it was kind of a cool coming out party for a lot of like Web3 crypto, the Nouns thing that you've talked about in the past, that ad where they made an appearance in the Budweiser ad. It was pretty cool. It was cool to see.
Definitely cool to see. I definitely had like moments where as a crypto person, I was watching that and my, you know, my heart warmed a bunch of times. I think going back to like TV ads as a medium in 2022, I think like why Super Bowl ads work is because people tune in to Super Bowl ads. Like I bet you more people prefer the halftime show and Super Bowl ads than the actual Super Bowl itself. The difference between like regular TV ads is it's interruption. You're just like you're there. You're like, okay, you know, Clorox, you're like in my face, like get out of there. So I think that what works is, you know, traditional TV advertisements or traditional advertising in channels where people are tuning in, not tuning out. So that was a small takeaway I had.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting point. It's also an interesting point on the halftime show because I don't know if you've ever seen the mechanics of how that works, but basically the NFL contributes like $1 million towards the halftime show and any other amount that the artists want in order to create an amazing experience at the halftime show is self-funded by the artists. So like last year, The Weeknd, I think invested $7 million of his own capital into making an amazing experience, the halftime show. This year, Dr. Dre put in $6 million, and so they spent $7 total in addition to the one. And the rationale behind it is pretty interesting because it's basically a 15-minute ad for that artist to go and hook people on what they're, the content that they are creating. And so relative to like spending, Coinbase spent $14 million for a 60-second spot, Dr. Dre spent $7 million for a 15-minute spot of all these artists. Might not be quite as relevant for Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, maybe they're not touring as much, but for The Weeknd last year, the amount of ROI that he got on that $7 million is probably astounding in terms of, you know, tour ticket sales, merch, Spotify streams. All of his songs ended up on the top charts in the days that followed. That's worth a lot of money. So it's pretty fascinating when you think about the mechanics of these halftime shows as well.
It makes me think, like, is there an opportunity to do halftime shows, but for other events? So obviously Super Bowl has 100 million people watching or more. But there's tons of events that have a million people watching, 100,000 people watching, 10 million people watching, where you can create a business that basically creates these tours, and you can combine these artists, you combine the brands, and then you sell it to the NFL, the NHL, college, whatever. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, the challenge is, would you still capture as much attention as you do during the Super Bowl? That's, to your point, the value here is the fact that there's, I don't know, 100 million people watch this. How many of them are tuned in specifically for commercials and for the halftime show? And so you know you have this massive captive audience when you're delivering that content. Could you start to shift the narrative around these other events and create a place where the halftime show is actually drawing people into the other event? Maybe. And you could, I mean, effectively get a discounted rate from the fact that you're actually contributing value to the main event via the halftime show. It's sort of an interesting
concept.
Here's
what I like about halftime shows. So, and by the way, this is a stream of consciousness, so let me know if this doesn't make sense. So halftime shows are for everyone. Games are for some people. So if you could create interesting, you know, halftime shows and create cultural statements and bring culture to events that are beyond just like hardcore sports, I just think that there's, and A, it makes the game like richer and more more interesting to folks, and B, I think it gives artists a channel to access audiences and to, you know, beyond their tour dates or beyond like shows that they're gonna do.
It also brings communities together. I don't think it's crazy what you said. It brings communities together because, I mean, you think of the case of the Super Bowl, the amount of Super Bowl parties, people that come together, cool moments that creates. And that's because it's an immersive and welcoming environment where it's not just, you know, men watching the Super Bowl. It's everybody. My wife loves to watch the Super Bowl because of the commercials and because of the halftime show, and she likes the football and gets engaged in it. And it's a fun experience for us together. So I don't think it's crazy at all.
I think, like post-pandemic, these Super Bowl type events are going to get a lot bigger, and the ecosystem events around a lot of these events are going to get a lot bigger. So yeah,
it's cool to think about how you could build a business around creating, I mean, you kind of alluded to it earlier, create halftime shows or similar events, short, like 10 to 15 minute events that are really immersive, that can be inserted into either physical or digital events, because these gatherings are going to be more and more prolific and at more and more scale within the digital world, right? You can just get so many people versus in a physical place. And so how can you like aggregate and insert interesting content into that in a profitable way? I think it's interesting.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I think that was my light bulb moment last night. Nostalgia and halftime shows, something there.
Yeah. So I was thinking more and more, it kind of got me thinking more and more about these ideas that I've talked about around creators and owned audiences. You know, we were talking about the kind of owned audience effect of people tuning in for the Super Bowl and how it's a good way to capture a bunch of people at once. And it's effectively priced in, right? They price the Super Bowl ads. And so you're not really getting a deal on it per se. But if you do something really splashy, like what Coinbase did, you can really win. And, you know, there's this whole concept now that creators are kind of the future of brands and advertising. I was talking with Alex, one of the founders at Morning Brew recently, And he was talking, and he's been tweeting and doing videos about how he thinks that creators are really the future, and the fact that they have an owned audience, and the fact that they have a really fervent and passionate audience and a community built around them, that is the future of consumer brands, distribution, etc. And it got me down the rabbit hole on Mr. Beast, who I'm sure you're familiar with, but like one of the most prolific YouTube creators. I think we've talked about him in the past in the context of that Squid Games reenactment video that he did, which I think now has like 200 million views or something like that, something completely insane. But Mr. Beast recently launched this chocolate company. And that was like a light bulb moment for me personally as I was thinking about it, because look, this is a 23-year-old young man. He has 90, approaching 100 million subscribers on YouTube. I think 15 billion plus video views to date, 40 million in revenue or something like that in 2021. That Squid Games reenactment video did more, generated more revenue than the original, which is completely insane to me. And I think he grew by like 5 million subs from that one video, which is remarkable as well. So Mr. Beast has gone and launched this chocolate company called Feastables. And they've done it in a very interesting way, where the whole launch was tailored around this like Willy Wonka chocolate factory type deal, where you had like tickets, like golden tickets in there. And so there's a chance to win his actual chocolate factory. There's like $1 million in prizes. You can be in a Mr. Beast video if you get one of the lucky tickets. And it's such a fascinating case study of like the future of where these consumer launches and brands are going, because he has a massive owned audience. I mean, imagine the number of people that are going and buying this because they're seeing him holding it in their videos. They're seeing him interact with it, talk about it, etc. It's a good product. You know, they're like doing the whole like very few base ingredients. I'm sure it's kind of best in class in terms of a formulation standpoint. And they brought in a really legit team to help run it, because they know that immediately this has scale to it. It's not like a consumer brand that you need to get off the ground and slowly build a base. He has this enormous embedded community and audience around it. So I've just been thinking more and more about this, and like, what are the opportunities to build at scale around this concept? Like, it's great on an individual level that a Mr. Beast can go do this. But what are the business opportunities that exist around this general trend that is developing?
Have you heard of Knight Media?
No.
Okay, pull it up.
Yeah.
So I know about these guys because we work with them on some projects at Late Checkout. And basically,
is it knight as in like a medieval knight?
Oh, no.
Or like a
knight, like it's nighttime. Nighttime. It's the website is knight.co.
Okay, I got it. Yeah.
So basically, they manage talent, including Mr. Beast.
This is a dope website, by the way.
They're a venture studio, so they basically partner with operators. So like, you, Sahil Bloom, might partner with like a top, you know, YouTube creator that they manage to create a product, and they do investing.
This is really cool. So this is what I'm getting at. Like, there has to be an opportunity to create a like holding company of sorts where this is more of like an agency, as far as I can tell, where like they're representing these people and they will kind of bring them to bear, and then there's ownership. I thought it would be interesting if you got like 10 creators together and basically gave them joint ownership. Like, you came together, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, etc., and you kind of take joint ownership of this holding company. And the holding company then has an investment fund, which I imagine you could go raise $1 billion for, because people would definitely give you capital given the collective influence the fund would have. And then you would have everyone's individual brands underneath it, probably some sort of just like revenue share where like 10% of the profits they make go back into the holding company pool. And then you have any individual brands you're launching off of it, and you launch them, and then you kind of hire a team and you can spin them out. Like, it becomes this like creator IAC of the future, that I think is like a really, really cool concept.
And you know, you call it too, right? You call it Halftime Ventures.
Halftime Ventures. There you go. There's probably something really cool to do with it. You're normally the guy that brings up tokenomics and Web3, but I'm just thinking about like over time, because you would set an ownership base presumably at the beginning, but over time, as different people grow in different amounts and are contributing different value to it, it would be pretty interesting if you had a way to kind of have the creators that are growing the fastest and that are contributing the most value to the holding company actually kind of profit from that in some way. And similarly, the people that are following them that want to kind of participate within that value creation might have a mechanism via some form of tokenomics.
Yeah, I think the really cool thing about creators in general is, and we talked about ecosystems before, is you have the creator and then you have their communities and ecosystem around that. So if you could create, a new version of IAC or holding company where these creators are incubating products, but you know they're seeing upside, which is really cool. Their communities are seeing upside, which is really cool. And you can use Web3 to do really fun things. Like, for example, you know, maybe you can't, maybe you get, if you stake, let's say your tokens, you get certain benefits, you get extra tokens. Like, you know, maybe there's ways to reward, communities and creators that are more, are in it for the long haul. So I do like that.
Yeah.
That piece of it. That's a good point.
Yeah. I just feel like one of the trends that I see happening right now is that creators are individually going and building kind of equity in things, right? And you kind of have like a bunch of creators that are raising small funds. We've seen that obviously a bunch of our friends. I'm a part of that movement. Like there's a bunch of people doing this. And I tend to think that like 1 + 1 = 3 if you bring these people together. If you had the collective sway of a bunch of the biggest YouTubers, a bunch of the biggest Twitter, a bunch of the biggest TikTok, a bunch of the biggest Instagram, et cetera, and you kind of brought it into a single fund, that would guaranteed be able to go and raise and collect more value from LPs and the fee base of that and the potential future carry of it than just these individual small funds that people are able to raise. So I think it'd be pretty interesting to actually see something like this come together. I've seen like, I have a friend, Marshall Sandman, who runs Animal Capital, which is like the Sway House guys, Josh Richards and those guys. Is that his name? Josh Richards, right? That's pretty interesting because they're bringing this collective kind of sway. But can you go do that on a mass scale where you bring a bunch of people together and you have a holding company structure where you can spin things out? I think it's pretty interesting. And there's probably a bunch of adjacent infrastructure businesses that would need to be built in order to enable people to do that.
So how would you do it? How would you do it? So let's just say someone is listening to this and wants to go and create this. Easier for Sahil Bloom to do it with, you know, 500,000 Twitter followers by the time we hopefully... by the time we put this out, what sort of advice can you give to people who might not have an audience, but who want to create something like this?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the actual putting together of the structure, I think would need to be led by the individuals that are going to be a big part of it. Like they would need to all be on board for it, but the individual pieces of like business and infrastructure around it, I think could really be anybody. Like when you think about pitching them on it, I think there's an interesting thing to just be pitched. I would be glad to be a part of that because I think it's a pretty interesting concept that I've played around with different people. But I do tend to think that like the infrastructure layer of somebody going and launching a new brand, like a Feastables, is there a kind of... Is there infrastructure and tools that exist that allow creators to very quickly spin up product drops or new consumer brands? Things like that, where you're kind of playing the adjacent trend, I think are probably the more reasonable way for anyone to get involved in that type of movement. But I don't know. I need to think about it more. We should muse on it more because I actually do think there's something interesting here and something that we're probably uniquely well-suited to go and play.
Here's how, if anyone's listening, here's how I would think about it. To me, it's very similar to how you start a conference and you want to get guest speakers. So the thing, or you're starting a podcast and you want to get, you know, great guest speakers. You try to just like get bigger and bigger names and use those names to leverage other names. And then once you have, you know, let's say, Mr. Beast as a part of this, or Mr. Beast coming to your event, then it's really easy to get anyone else. So I think the way to do this is you have to make a compelling, like make a video or something, like record a video, make something really cool, like grab an iPhone, but make it like unique and interesting, and just like DM as many people as possible. And then wait until you get that one person to say yes, and then use that one person to say yes to like leverage, and then be like, I've got this person, you should come on board.
Yeah, it's a hustle game. It's a hustle game in the early days. I feel like that's a good transition too, to bring in our guest for today, who is a amazing creator in his own right, but also has kind of taken the creator path, and now effectively transitioned into building really scale businesses and equity around it. So I want to bring in our guest, and we can dive into it with him and go a little bit deeper here.
Cool. Let's do it.
So I want to kick off by just hearing
Wait, we're recording
who you
now?
Are.
We're recording?
Yeah, but we can delete out whatever you don't like.
Oh, okay. Wait. Well, first of all, nice to meet you, Greg.
Nice to meet you, man. Nice to meet you. I must admit, I've seen your videos. So it's like, it's weird for me because
you and 10 million
it's
others.
It's weird for me because it's like, I don't know if this is a video or am I dreaming or what's going on. But great to meet you.
Right, Greg, tell me more about yourself. Who are you?
Yeah, background in building, you know, internet communities. Was an advisor to TikTok, advisor to Reddit, started and sold 3 companies, ran product strategy at WeWork. Now I run a holding company, which is called Late Checkout, which does investing, incubating, and agency work, building Web3 and community-based products for some of the biggest brands.
That's smart. That's cool. I love your website.
Thank you.
Okay, great. This is great. Wow, it's an amazing website.
It's an insane website. Completely insane website. Yeah. So okay. Maybe we can just start. I want to dive in and get your story and background, because I think it's so interesting how you have progressed from where you start. You know, you grew up in Israel. I want to kind of hear the background. Like, yeah, I've looked up and spent a bunch of time understanding, you know, your path. And it's such an interesting one to where you are today and the business building that you've kind of created around the creator economy as well. But maybe we can just start at the beginning. I'd love to just hear your kind of journey, Nuz.
Yeah, yeah. First of all, guys, Greg, Sahil, thank you so much for having me here. Really appreciate it. Yeah, so my name is Nusair. Like, yes, sire, no, sire. Yes, sire, no, sire. It's complicated. I was born and raised in Israel. I'm Palestinian Israeli, so it's double whammy. Moved to the United States for college, got into Harvard, not a double whammy. Graduated, worked as a software engineer at Venmo before it was cool. Now Venmo is really cool. Back then it was cool too. And then decided to become a creator. And so started making videos, put them on the internet, and then to my surprise, like, people started to watch. I made 1,000 videos in 1,000 days, never missed a day, not even once. I adopted Facebook as my platform as opposed to YouTube. Maybe that's why half your audience doesn't know me. And it blew up from there. And now Nuz Daily has, you know, 47 million followers in 13 different languages around the world. And after I finished that journey of making content, I started a tech company. Going back to my software engineering roots. So we're building basically a masterclass for creators. And we have been building it for 2 years. We're venture funded, Series A. And we will be Series B very soon, I hope. And that's me. I'm talking to you from Dubai.
So I need to back you up a little bit on this whole thing, because there's so many interesting points in that story. So you get into Harvard. You ended up at Harvard. I think I read that you were originally going to do an aerospace engineering degree, ended up doing economics and computer science, which I think is probably more practical. Maybe you'd be working for SpaceX or something now, working in the space economy. But you end up at Venmo. How did you decide to quit your job and go off on this journey? Because you were on, like, probably what was a very lucrative and great track. And as someone with immigrant parents, and Indian, you know, an Indian mother, Jewish father, I was always someone who felt like the safe track was the one I was supposed to be taking. And I imagine your parents had maybe similar perspectives.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, that decision happened 6 years ago. I think the riskiest part of that decision is not the money. It's actually the visa. Because when you quit your job as an international, you lose your H-1B. And you need somebody else to sponsor it. And you need to win the lottery again. And I was just like, it was just a stupid decision in retrospect. Actually, maybe smart. But I was like, I don't need America. I don't need the visa. And I don't need the 120K per year. Because I had 60K savings already. So 60K is all it takes really to feel a sense of I'm never going to be homeless, you know? Yeah.
Are there companies, just to pause you on the visa point, because you're sparking an idea. Are there companies that help people with this? Like a company that you can nominally work for and acquire a visa via that when you're doing a non-traditional path?
Yeah, that sounds like illegal.
Yeah.
Nominally work for equals illegal.
You think so? I don't know. Like a company that will basically take people that are going to go on a non-traditional but potentially lucrative path and bear the risk of the payment on, you know, on whatever it costs to get them the visa, but then gets a percent of the upside around it. Mm. It's sort of like they're investing in your future, which could be potentially much more valuable. And they're the ones that are going to incur the costs around the visa process.
Well, you are very entrepreneurial, man. I gotta admire that. But I think the US government asks you why you want the visa.
I'll raise you, you know, I'll add to that idea. So LinkedIn, but it's for jobs that, you know, US companies will sponsor your visa. J-1, which is your internship visa, which is really easy to give. TN, which is your Canadian US, you know, it's just all broken down and categorized around different categories. As a Canadian myself and who moved to the US, like I dealt with so much pain around just like visas and stuff like that. And so many friends have.
Totally.
And it doesn't need to be this way.
I mean, it's insane.
And we're in a job shortage, right? Like we need to hire people.
Yeah. And highly technical and skilled workers too. I mean, it's an insane problem. I mean, I have close family who grew up in Bangladesh and are still Bangladeshi citizens, I believe. And it's
impossible.
One of them worked for Amazon and then wanted to go start a startup, but literally couldn't leave Amazon because of that challenge of like, oh, well, then I'm going to have to move back to Bangladesh because I won't have a visa.
Yeah. Wow. Crazy. From Amazon to Bangladesh.
Anyway.
Back to you, Naz.
Super interesting. Anyway, back to you. Sorry.
I got to ask. So, you know, you said something when you were kind of explaining a bit about yourself, which I really dialed into, which is, you basically were like, hey, I started making a bunch of videos. And then to my surprise, people started watching. And I made it 1,000 videos every single day. So number one, like how surprised were you actually? Like, and how long did it take for you? Like, how did you do it basically? Like, what advice could you give to people listening who want to create something, who want to, you know, create videos, create tweets, create whatever? What sort of frameworks could you give to people to help them get hundreds of millions of people watching?
Yeah. Well, Greg, the problem with this podcast is that people cannot see my face, right? When they see my face, they realize, wow, this is not a Hollywood face. You know, there's a lot of, this is why
I don't sell yourself short.
Come on, man. You know what? I thank you for being nice, but that's bullshit because before starting Naz Daily, I went on Tinder. And I swiped right to basically on every single girl for the next 500 girls. And then I just got like two swipes back. Two.
People don't want a Hollywood face anymore. They want a TikTok face. That's what they want.
Okay. Well, I guess preference changed in the last 6 years. Well, unfortunately, I've been in a relationship for 5 years. So I don't need to swipe anymore. But when I swiped, I got no responses. So that's when I knew, statistically speaking, I don't have the face to go viral. That's number one. Number two is I scream in my videos. I don't know if you've seen the videos, but I fucking scream. And a lot of people think that's annoying. Number three, you know, I'm from Israel, which is a very controversial country and all this stuff. So yeah, a lot of reasons. That's why I was surprised people resonated to my storytelling. My recommendation for people watching is probably, you know, what is my recommendation actually? You know, the truth of the matter is, you know how there is like companies that find product market fit? I think there is such a thing called personality market fit. There are just some personalities that literally cannot go viral, that literally cannot be relatable. And there are some personalities that are just make one video and you'll be immediately in love, people in love with you, like Charli D'Amelio, for example. So my recommendation is first, understand if you have personality market fit. And for that, you need to look at very early signals in your day-to-day life to see if you could rally the crowd around you. So I'll give you one of the earliest signals I knew that I potentially could have a career here, despite my Tinder failure, which was I looked at my Facebook, my personal Facebook, and I uploaded a status update and it got 60 likes, 60. And I looked at my roommate and he uploaded one status update and it got 6 likes. Now I was wondering, like, why is my status update 10 times more engaging than my roommate, who is actually 10 times more attractive than me? And those are the signals I started to understand, like, oh my God, like my personal Facebook is consistently popping. You know, if I throw a rooftop party, people show up. If I throw a NAS summit 6 years later, people consider showing up. And I was like, huh, there's something there. I wonder if I could find 60 million people as opposed to 60. And now we found 47 million and we have 13 million more people to go.
So that is fascinating to me, the way that you laid that out, because I think it clicks with me in a lot of ways in my own experience as a creator with the Twitter stuff I've done, because in prior lives I had experienced something similar with Facebook on a personal level or with LinkedIn on micro scales. And then with Instagram, I had a brief appearance as like a travel Instagram photographer, deleted my Instagram in 2017 because I didn't think it was healthy. but I had those same moments and just never really thought about it the way that you laid out, that you have these kind of signals. The other thing that you're not giving yourself credit for is you created 1,000 videos over 1,000 days.
Yes.
And one thing that we consistently come back to on this show, whether it's with the founder of Reddit, Alexis Ohanian, or whether it's with Scott Belsky, the head of product at Adobe, these amazing entrepreneurs, founders, creators that we've had on, is the consistency, the relentless consistency of effort is a common thread among all of them. All of them actually say that they're not particularly special, which I call bullshit on, by the way. Like, everyone says that. I think it's this great thing of humility. Awesome. I respect the hell out of it.
Yeah.
I think it's bullshit. I think all of you are very special. But one thing that you all have in common for sure is this uncommon, relentless consistency around the efforts. Once you've found something that works, you know how to just go deep, 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 deep down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, that is very true. I think you would call it in a different world, like obsession. Because it took me 270 videos to actually, you know, make it big with NAS Daily to get to, you know, to 4X in one day. So my overnight success took 270 days, every single day, every single weekend working and making that 1 minute video. So I would say it's like, you know, like deep down inside, like I knew this is supposed to work from day one, but it took 270 days for it to actually work.
How did you deal with the emotional side of creation and of the process? Like it's very similar to entrepreneurs. Greg can attest to this in his own entrepreneurial journey. The highs and lows, the swings are enormous. And there's a high incidence of depression, I think, among entrepreneurs and among creators for this reason, because you have this daily scorecard of your performance. And when you're posting something on Facebook every day and you thought it was amazing and two people like it, or in your case, you know, 200 versus 2,000, you're the only person that really thought about that, by the way, but it really does impact your mood. So how did you deal with that emotional side of the process and journey?
Yeah, the truth of the matter is I don't deal with it. It stresses the crap out of me. And you're so right, it's very similar to entrepreneurship. Like yesterday I thought my company is gonna be $10 billion. Today I think it's gonna be a failure. You know, like literally within 24 hours, there's a $10 billion difference. Every day when I was making those videos, if one video tanks, I say, okay, I lost my Facebook page. It's gone. It's dead forever. And I had that feeling 500 days out of the 1,000. I'm not here to give any advice because I suffer from this every day. I do think about getting a shrink. I do think about getting into like a mental hospital or something, because it is, you know, it's when you take content and entrepreneurship at the same time, you know, the highs and lows are doubled. So yeah,
here's an idea.
No solution to it. You got to suck it up.
Here's an idea. Mental health hospitals for creators.
Dude, I completely agree.
I'm all in on that. I think it's brilliant.
Completely.
Like, even just like a tailor-made daily video or something that you can click on when you're facing those very common problems that creators all face, like hedonic treadmill. You know, getting 1,000 likes on a Twitter thread in the past for me was like, holy shit, I just got 1,000 likes on this. Now 1,000 likes, I feel like, holy shit, that's a dud. Why did I spend the time to write that? I'm useless. I'm a piece of shit. Yeah, it's like dealing with those daily things. That's something everyone deals with. And it's such a personal journey and you're the only one that thinks about it. So I agree, Greg. Like, I think you could build very simple mental health curriculum with like little modules where you could just click on that video of like something to give you perspective on X, Y, or Z, plus kind of peer-to-peer matching or like a community effect where you could talk with other creators in real time about how you're dealing with that. Like our WhatsApp group, Nas, is one of the most amazing things because it's a WhatsApp group that was put together by our friend Sriram over at A16Z. And it has just a bunch of amazing creators in it across YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, you know, Instagram, etc. And people actually share things they're struggling with on a daily basis. And then other people come in and give them perspective on it or how to think about it. I asked one time how to deal with negativity and everyone gave their perspectives and it really helped me. So,
and that's how we connected,
how do you productize,
by the way.
That?
That's how we connected.
Exactly. Right? That's how we connected. And so thinking about how you productize that, Greg, to your point, I think is pretty
okay. I got the idea.
Actually.
You know, the company.
I got the name. I got the name. We're going to register the name after this as soon as, so when this is live, and if anyone wants to work on this, cause I think it would actually make the lives of creators a lot more healthy and happy. And in turn, hopefully make other people happier and healthier. So the name is creatorsgeneralhospital.com.
Okay, that's amazing. I love that.
We could bring in, like, I bet we could bring in 10 or 15 creators as like part owners of this, by the way, and you'd have buy-in from people that could talk about it with their audiences, because creators tend to have a lot of aspiring creators in their audiences. So the distribution of it would actually be really easy because you could just talk about it and you would know you had, you know, 5% ownership or something of this company. We just need to find someone really good to build it and run it.
Yeah, but I think you cannot put hospital as a trademark in the company name, I think. It must be reserved somewhere. But actually, a similar company that's doing it is from Israel. It's called BetterHelp.
No, well, I think that that is I think the thing that's really interesting about this idea is that it's like this general framework that I talk about often of like the I think it's like generally Christensen's model of disruptive innovation, where you have a space that is massive in mental health, and you have companies that are trying to serve the entire spectrum of mental health. That's very hard because what happens is you end up over-serving some customers, under-serving others. You're not providing the perfect service to some people. And so what you'd focus on with this, for creators in particular, is provide the exact set of mental health services that creators need. And you'd go to creators and figure out exactly like what are the 10 or 15, you know, swings in emotion that tend to happen, whether it's too high or too low, you know, negativity on the platforms, whatever it is. And you'd create simple modules and simple products that would allow you to feel better in those moments. And then you'd pair it with community. because I think that that's a super interesting thing that you and I, Naz, have seen is really powerful when you, when you have a community you can talk to or rely on. And you'd figure out basically how to provide that very specific set of services. And I don't think it would be that hard to set up actually as a company. And you could be the creator mental health platform very quickly. And if you launched with creators in partnership, as part owners of the company, you could probably get to scale pretty quickly as well.
There you go. There you go.
That's a
$100 million idea.
Greg, what do you think?
I love it. I think that what I like about it too is it's relatively simple to get going. Like, it's just about scoping what are those nuanced services that you need? How do you ensure that the mental health professionals are high quality and can do the job? And then it's just like a landing page, really, a great brand and a landing page.
And I think you go talk to 100 creators, like go talk to 25 TikTokers, 25 YouTubers, 25 Twitter, whatever, and ask them what the, you know, swings of emotion are. Give us like three things that impact your daily mental health as a creator. And then you go, you know, partner with mental health providers and mental health doctors who can actually create the services that would improve their lives in those regards. And then you pair it with community so that people can pop in and ask their questions or talk to someone that's unbiased or even anonymized to help with those things on a daily basis. Because I do think there's going to be more and more people. It's a great macro trend. There's more and more people that are going to be creators that are thinking these things. And people are going to feel this more and more because we're in this world now that is going to be increasingly digital. And so that connection and the more time you spend there, the more negativity you're going to face, the more of this like kind of highs and lows swings you're going to face. There's a pretty interesting business to be built around this.
Yeah. And I think there's totally. a social good angle too, right? You could do like for every hour of mental health help that the creator buys, maybe you give an hour to someone who needs it, who can't afford it.
That's interesting too. Like a Tom's Shoes, buy one, get one type thing. Buy one, give one rather.
Are you guys in the brainstorming phase in your lives where you're looking for the next company to build?
I think we're always in that phase. I mean, part of this show is ideating in real time, basically giving people we called it Where It Happens, which is a play on The Room Where It Happens, and basically give people a lens into the kind of insight to idea to execution journey that entrepreneurs, founders, executors, operators go through. And so democratizing access to the rooms where these interesting conversations happen and where ideas are created and formed. So part of it is literally this type of thing where we're on and we're talking and we're like, oh, holy shit, that's an interesting idea. Let's go down the rabbit hole a bit on it. And then we have a community set up in Discord where we'll try to go deeper on those things and where people are actually trying to go start some of these ideas that have come out of the show.
That's smart. How many companies have spun out of this so far?
Well, we're only, what is this, episode 10, Greg? I mean, we're not very many episodes in. We launched this show a few months ago. So there's actually, I mean, there's three separate channels now built around specific ideas that have come out of the show. And you have like people going and doing research on different things that are coming out of there. The ultimate vision is that we can create a fund around the show that actually invests behind these ideas. And you can kind of seed them out where it's almost like the show becomes a holding company of sorts.
That's great.
Yeah. I think it's pretty interesting. So tell us, before we run out of time, I want to hear more about Naz Academy as a company. And so you did your creator journey. You had scaled massively, you know, on Facebook. You then launched your YouTube in, I think, 2019. You've scaled enormously on YouTube as well. I love your video going to North Korea, by the way. It was fucking awesome. Fascinating. I watched it with my wife. It was so, so good. So I'm curious then how you kind of thought about jumping into building a business and maybe kind of, you know, slowing down some of your creator output and focusing on building equity and building a real business that frankly enables a lot of other creators to go and create what they want to.
So look, here's the way I think about it for any creators that are listening to this. You have a shelf life. you have a shelf life that either the market dictates or your mental health dictates, which is basically like, say, 5-6 years. You know, even the algorithm on Facebook and YouTube does not like you forever, right? At some point, the algorithm's best interest is to recommend other creators on the platform to keep it fresh. So you can never be the biggest creator on Facebook forever. So your shelf life is 5-6 years. When I was reaching my shelf life, which was roughly year 3-4, I was like, shit, quick, I got to build a company so that I need to build it for the next 3 years. So by the time I'm out of my shelf life as a creator, I have a $1 billion company. You know, so basically I'm using my creator lifespan as a leverage to become an entrepreneur. The last thing you want is to be caught in a cycle too late. Then you'll just be a has-been as a creator, and you'll be a failed company as a company. So this is why I made the jump. I've also always dreamed of having an organization that works when you're asleep. The problem with creation is that when you're asleep, there is no creation. Mm. But when you have 1,000 people working, you can still be productive 24/7. And last but not least, I think every creator is a business. You're an individual as a business. You're a business of one. That's what a creator is, nothing else. So going from a business of one to a business of 1,000 shouldn't be that impossible. So that's why we're taking on that challenge as well. So you know, these are the reasons why I decided to start a company. Now, the question is, why did I decide to start this specific company, Masterclass for Creators? Well, there's a need. Nobody's teaching in the world. Greg, I don't think you're teaching. Sahil, I don't think you're teaching other than those tweets. And you have knowledge. What the hell is, you know, what's going on? Like, your knowledge is really highly privileged. It's only your friends in that WhatsApp group that can access that knowledge. So we really are on a mission to convince as many creators as possible to productize their knowledge and share it with their audience. And that's kind of the idea behind NAS Academy.
So both Sahil and I have done a few of these cohort-based courses. And
oh, you did? Shit. I assume you're not teaching.
And I just checked NAS Academy. Is it cohort-based or is it like recorded? And could you talk a little bit more about, you know, the best way for creators like us to educate people?
Yeah, so it's actually cohort-based recorded. So that's the beauty of it. It's like hybrid. So the problem with just cohort-based is that you need to be teaching all the time. Every single cohort, you need to do the work. It doesn't scale. With NAS Academy, it's like it's recorded, but the recordings are only available at a certain time. They unlock at a certain time, finish at a certain time. So every 100 students are put in one group and they learn together. There's a coach assigned to them to make sure they all meet each other and communicate with each other. And then they watch your video files when they unlock every day. That's kind of the idea behind it. So it's a scalable way for creators to teach in cohorts.
So how would you, like, I'm familiar with, like, I think Greg and I both did our courses with Maven, which is sort of the biggest platform now around like the live cohort-based courses. Yeah. How does it work? You know, one of the things Maven, I think, has done really, really well is they actually teach teachers how to be effective teachers. Yeah. Like, you know, the future digital professors, they do a course to teach them. How much training are you doing around, like with the creators so that the quality of the content and the course that they're going and creating, the videos, et cetera, is exceptional?
So I invested in Maven and Maven invested in us. So we're sister companies, basically. You know, we love them. I love Gagan and Wes. They're incredible people. And they've done something amazing. I think Maven is specializing in the live. Yep. We are specializing in the pre-recorded, but it's all cohort-based. We actually do a lot of hand-holding. So we have a curriculum team. We have a video editing team. So we go to your house, Sahil, and basically we shoot you for 2 days. We help you edit the classes for very, 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 very cheap. And then we put them out on the internet, on the marketplace setting of NAS Academy. So NAS Academy is not just software to help you teach, but it's also giving you distribution. Think of it like Amazon, and Maven is like Shopify, right? Mm-hmm. So we're trying to build the destination, kind of like Udemy and Masterclass, while Maven is building, let's say, the infrastructure, Teachable and Shopify.
So does NAS Academy have like an all access pass in the way Masterclass does, or is it self-serve kind of individual courses?
Yeah, so the problem with a self with a class pass is that eventually you lose control as a creator of your class. You have no incentive to teach in NAS Academy, because if you're bringing in one extra user, we make all the money, you know, forever. So that's why we're actually keeping it by purchase only. We're enabling subscription for you. So you can subscribe to Sahil, $20 a month to learn from him. So it becomes like, it's like a mix between Patreon and Masterclass, basically.
Oh, this is interesting. Super, super interesting. And then how does that tie in for you as a business to these summits that you run?
So we are, you know, Nas means people in Arabic. It just happens to be in my nickname, but Nas means people in Arabic. And we just want to build the people company. So Nas Academy, People's Academy, Nas Summit, People's Summit, Nas Daily, people, stories of people every day. Nas Hotel, you know, Nas Fund, everything. We just want to build Nas. Everything ties to everything. You know, it's like a flywheel effect. In the Nas Summit, we're bringing creators. Casey Neistat, by the way, is going to be the keynote. That's going to be very exciting. You know, we're trying to bring creators together in physical settings just to make the tide rise for all boats. And we'll benefit a little bit, but you'll benefit the most. And this also is the same way we run NAS Academy. You make most of the revenue. We take a small cut.
I love it. I just love how it overlays community into all of this, because I imagine, you know, when you bring this many great creators together, they're all going to be building, they're going to start collaborating on different things. They'll do videos together. They'll be working together. You know, there's just a lot of interesting things that will then trace their lineage back to the summit that was happening in Dubai, or whichever summit had occurred digitally or physically.
Exactly. We just want to make interesting people meet other interesting people. That's it.
So, I was just going to say, just because we're running out of time in a few minutes, but, you know, do you have any 5-year predictions around where creators are going to go? Like, what does the future of creators look like in 5 years, according to Nas?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Well, I want to say something controversial. What can I say? Like, if I say it will increase, well, whoop-de-doo, Sherlock Holmes, also cancer will increase, you know, like, so of course it'll increase. I think the idea that you need to be a video creator to be a creator is going to be like, not like it will disappear. I think video creator is going to be a minority potentially. Like, you could be an NFT creator, a 3D artist creator. So I think the definition of creator will increase from just vlogger to NFT artist, or even an engineer could become a creator. Two, I think they will make a crap ton of money. I think you're going to definitely see a creator. Will you see a creator billionaire? I think you will.
100%.
There will be a creator billionaire. I don't think it's going to be Mr. Beast, by the way.
Why is that?
I think they'll come from India. I think a lot of people in India are like killing it, but the mainstream media in the United States does not listen, does not watch. Like Unacademy, for example, is a $4 billion company started by a YouTuber. Baiju is the biggest educational company in the world, worth $15 billion. It was started by a teacher who started on YouTube. So I don't, you know, let's get out of the US bubble a little bit. Mm. It's already happening. So we're definitely going to see a YouTuber who becomes a billionaire in the next 5 years.
The first YouTuber creator billionaire will come from India. You heard it here first.
Oh, you should tweet that, bro. That would be insane.
I love that. That's a great, I have a lot of my audience is in India because of my own heritage as well. But that's a great prediction. I think it's an interesting one. And I think your prediction on the kind of dynamic nature of what creators will look like is a fascinating prediction as well. Greg and I have talked about that in various forms on the show. Pseudonymous creators, you know, creators that never show their face in any way. In this digital world, and as we increasingly move towards living in and caring more about our digital worlds than our physical realities, I think it's more and more going to become the case. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, that's exciting. But the problem is we're not building for that world. You're not building for that world. We're still video. Actually, are you a video creator? Would you say you're a video creator?
We post videos around this show. Like this video will be posted, and we do half the episodes live in person, and so that we can post videos. But I wouldn't consider myself a video creator yet, just because of the scale of my reach there is so low relative to on Twitter.
Yeah.
Eventually, I hope to be. I don't know if I'm as your Tinder game. What's that?
How's your Tinder game? That dictates if you have
my Tinder game is zero. I've been married for 5 years, so you're gonna try to get me in trouble here. I've got a baby on the way. My Tinder game is non-existent. If my wife is listening, non-existent.
That's great.
No, this was awesome, man. I'm super appreciative of your time. I know it's late on your end as well. I hope I can make it over to one of these events. And if not, we need to just do more together. I feel like there's a ton of energy alignment around all of these things. And the future is very, very bright for what you're building. So I'm excited to watch your journey.
Thank you, guys. I mean, Greg, Sahil, thank you for having me on this podcast. And if you're ever thinking about teaching, you know where to go.
Absolutely. Now, so where can people find you? Just give us a quick plug. Where can people find you?
Yassin, YASSIN at NasDaily, NasAcademy.com, NasDaily.com, NasDaily, every social media platform. We got the usernames. So
yeah, I love it. Well, congratulations.
I'm impressed that you put your email out there to thousands of people who are listening. So you know, people listening, like hit him up. We hit him up. We were talking earlier about how to get creators on board for different product ideas, and we talked about like the importance of just like reaching out and doing that grind. So thank you for making it easier for people to spam you.
Oh, of course. By the way, I read every email. I don't respond to every email. So definitely I'm much easier to reach than some people with like 50,000 followers. I don't understand like why everybody plays I'm hard to reach. I'm easier to reach. I just don't respond if there's no connection. I read it.
I like that. Well, thank you so much. Hey everyone, Sahil here. By now, you know that I love going down rabbit holes. And today, I get to share one of my secret tools with you, Tegas. In today's market, we don't have time to spend weeks getting up to speed on a new company, industry, or idea. Tegas is the fastest way for investors and M&A teams to learn everything they need to know about a company, all from an on-demand digital platform. Tegas is the most extensive source of instantly available one-on-one conversations between investors and experts, covering companies from seed stage to the public markets. Just log in for instant access to 25,000 plus transcripts that are instantly searchable. To get a free trial today, sign up at tegas.co/room. Again, to sign up for a free trial, go to tegas.co/room. You won't regret it. Are you and your team still using your personal phone numbers for work? Do you call customers, partners, or candidates with your personal phone number? Do you find it hard to manage your work and personal calls when they're all mixed together on your smartphone? Well, we have a solution today, OpenPhone. You can use OpenPhone to get dedicated business phone number and keep all your work conversations separate and organized. OpenPhone is an all-in-one business phone system that can help your startup look more credible from the get-go. And it works right from your existing smartphone or computer. Each phone number comes with its own inbox for managing calls, texts, and voicemails all together, making it easy to keep track of every conversation. Numbers can be shared with your teammates too. Make outgoing calls, answer incoming calls, and even respond to text threads together, all from the same phone number. You can even set business hours or mute individual phone numbers with a tap, helping you silence work calls without losing touch with friends and family. OpenPhone is the easy-to-use modern phone system designed for startups like yours. To get started and save 20% on your first 6 months, visit openphone.co/room. Again, that's openphone.co/room to save 20% on your first 6 months. You won't regret it. Join our free community at trwih.com.
never let your world be broken enough.